My guest, Peter Rupert. We call you doctor?
You can call me Peter. That's fine.
Okay. Well, I assume you have a doctorate?
I do.
Okay. That would have been embarrassing if you didn't. No, I knew that. Dr. Peter Rupert, not wearing his lab coat, UCSB Economic Forecast Director. You know, I didn't print your background for your bio, for your introduction. I know I used to kid you. No, maybe I did. I'm looking at the wrong sheet here. You're also involved with this Laboratory for Aggregate Economic and Finance.
Correct.
You still doing that?
Still doing that.
Nobel laureate Finn Kidlin?
Kidlin, yep.
And you were previously served as Senior Research Advisor for the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. You still rooting for LeBron James?
Well, I did, and then I stopped when he went to Miami, and now I'm rooting for him again back in Cleveland.
And would you like it if he came to the Lakers? You wanted to stay in Cleveland?
I want to stay in Cleveland.
Yeah, I can understand that. Do you watch Family Guy?
No, I don't.
There's a character in there named Rupert. Did you know that?
Nope, I did not.
You know, I've been knowing you for years, and it finally dawned on me.
Okay.
We'll have to get you an episode. So the main topics we're going to cover with Peter today, we're going to cover housing in Santa Barbara and, of course, California overall, and the new Senate bill. States trying to force everyone to build high-density housing near railroads and bus stations. Used to be, hey, we're close to the bus. That would be a selling point. Now it's, no, we're far away from the bus. Don't worry. We'll be building high-rises next to us. And we're going to talk about his upcoming summit in May, UCSB. But let's start with a mini-summit, or what would you call that? You had a group together to discuss the impacts of the fire and the flood on Santa Barbara's business and real estate.
That's right.
Tell me about that.
It was last week. We had several people who, you know, are decision makers, and basically we had the insurance commissioner for California come down and talk about what he's seeing, what's going to happen as a result. And, you know, I think his basic message was that some of the risk models, you know, some of the insurance companies used, they didn't really track this fire very well, in the sense that the fire was a bit unpredictable. And so he said they're going to look at their risk models again. And basically, given the size of the damages overall in California, which I think he said was $12 billion, including, you know, Sonoma and Santa Barbara. So the $12 billion is going to be recouped at some point. He made a serious point by saying that these, you know, insurance companies can't do it all in 1 year. They can't get it all back in a year. They have a 20-year period where they can raise rates. And, you know, he basically said that a lot of people are going to be, they're going to see rates go up, and some people are going to have a much harder time getting insurance. There's no doubt about it. And it's just basically, you know, pure risk models.
And they're going to be redrawing floodplains, or...
They are.
And he was talking about both fire and flood, or
they haven't announced the flood stuff yet. That's coming today. He said he's going to announce the damages from the debris flow today.
Oh, so this was just $12 billion from the fire,
right?
Wow,
right. So it's you know, it's massive, and you know, his other point was, you know, as bad as it seems like it was here with the loss of lives and property, you know, it was much larger up in Napa, Sonoma.
Devastating. We've had local fires here over the years that certainly had more of an impact, but there was something very eerie and dark about this fire, because it just, even when it didn't impact people near the epicenter, it just, the whole air, it was just really bizarre.
Terrible air quality. Dark. The worst we've ever seen.
Yeah. People, I left town. Left town. I never leave town.
Right.
did he mention anything about causation? There's a lot of lawsuit kind of things going on. Did he mention? Well, what do you remember what he said? Or
I do. He basically said there's in California a law that says if something caused the floods, then that would be insurable. So they've made a claim that the fires were the responsible for the debris flow.
Right, and I've heard that. I guess I was talking about, and you probably didn't even want to answer this question, because there's some lawsuits now because of that causation. They're trying to say, well, because, you know, we lost our house in the flood and because of the fire, and the fire is because of A, B, and C.
Right.
He didn't talk about
that.
He did
not talk about that.
Yeah. Did he talk about controlled burns and how that might be increased now to try to create a little barrier and safety?
No, net? he was very, you know, he did talk a little bit about something he's trying to pass, which is if your fire department tells you to, you know, clear brush away from your house and do all these things to, you know, to make it safer, insurance companies don't even look at that. And he's got a bill that he's not a bill, but an idea that he's trying to push in the political realm, which says that if you do all this stuff to you know, make your house safer, that should be reflected in insurance rates.
Oh, I like that. That makes sense.
That makes sense.
Of course, I was thinking about the big picture with big control burns and big
right.
big
no.
swaths of.
No, he didn't talk at all about that.
I don't know what, but you know what? Why am I? Well, let me ask you this. What did you – I could get him on as a guest. You don't need to tell me what he said.
Right.
I should get him
you
on.
You get him on. He's busy. He's a bit, you know, he's super busy, and it was just so lucky that he came down to talk to us.
Thank you. Thank you. So thanks for sharing that. So well, what did you have to say? What was the focus of your – what did they ask you to address?
Well, I tried to talk a little bit about some of the things that we didn't really see, and that, for example – you know, the amount of debris and mud that was taken out of just the public sector. So that's the roads and those things. So the Public Works Department is responsible for roughly 15% of the land in Montecito. And they told me that they basically moved 500,000 cubic yards of mud and debris off of those public areas. So 500,000 cubic yards, by the way, a dump truck holds 10.
Oh, my God.
So this was 50,000 truckloads that went on our roads. And then, you know, the part that you don't see or don't think about is, you know, that severely damages roads. All that weight, all those trucks, and our roads are going to now be a little bit worse. They're going to cost more money to repair. So those are kind of things that we don't really, you know, think too much about.
Another thing I heard about where people were really worried about getting the mud away from trees because you're literally choking these trees.
Right.
I don't know if they talked about that.
Well, he talked a little bit about that much of this sediment that came down is fantastic soil. And
oh.
that people are thinking about getting rid of it. And their idea is if, you know, you can recontour your land a little bit, put some hills, do these different things, and keep the soil around, it's going to be great for the, you know, for the long term. So everybody necessarily shouldn't just go back to where it was.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that. I heard the opposite sometimes that some of this would somehow people worried about it being contaminated. Some of it was because when they went into the ocean, didn't it make the ocean
higher
levels?
I don't know that. But the other thing that we basically looked at was we had some data from the T fire and the Jesusita fire where I looked at the assessor parcel numbers and tried to figure out how many of those parcel numbers had no improvements since the fires. And I found basically somewhere between 16 and 20% of those lots are still with no improvements on them.
Well, that's very interesting.
It is interesting.
From
it's a big number. I mean, most people don't know, you know, about the rebuilding. And obviously what happened in Montecito, basically it's going to be 3 to 5 years before the vegetation grows back enough so that, we won't see another slide like that. But during that time period, it's very uncertain. And I think people get this misconception when someone says, you know, that's a 1 in 200 year event. Well, that doesn't mean it happens once every 200 years. It just means it's a low probability event. They can happen tomorrow or not happen for another 700 years.
But as you're pointing out, because of what did happen, we're more vulnerable?
We're more vulnerable for another three to five years.
Now, I read something. My guest, Peter Rupert, UCSB Economic Forecast Director, and we're talking about a kind of a mini event that was held last week, the last week of March 2018. About the impact of the fire and the flood in here in Montecito and the area. I read someone say that he had been hiking. It was a letter to the editor, you know, so it's anecdotal, but he had been hiking for years up there, and he always felt that the creeks and these catch basins, they weren't really empty and clean. And you know, I don't know how empty and clean they were and whether or not if they were absolutely in perfect condition, it would have made any difference. But now that it's happened, maybe they will be better?
I think that's right. I don't know about how clean they were, but I do know that the Santa Monica, I think it's called the Santa Monica watershed up there that comes through CARP, that they had a, they call them riparian corridors. Those are these catch basins. And that one was just built recently and basically saved a lot of Carpentaria. It would have been much, much different hadn't that happened. So I think it's, you know, this is very important that we start worrying a little bit more about our infrastructure, you know, getting these catch basins, these riparian corridors. And I did read that someone said what used to be a riparian corridor is now a canyon.
Wow.
And the hard part there is with the change in the creeks, the property lines are all different now. And we had the assessor on last week as well. Joe Holland was there. And he told, you know, the audience that, you know, they're going to have to start thinking seriously about how to redraw these, where the floodplains are. Many people's, you know, houses have changed completely in terms of their property. And the first thing that has to happen, of course, is Public Works comes out and they're going to define the roadways and the easements, et cetera, that they need. And then once that happens, then the, you know, residents can go back in and say, okay, now this is my new property line. You know, having said that, the assessor told everyone that he has no problem with assessing these some of these houses at zero.
Right, even the improvements and the land itself to allow people to recoup.
Right.
And wait. So that, yeah, I heard that.
Is not insured. The house is insured, but the land is not insured, right?
But pay tax on the land.
You pay tax on the land, but, you know, the fact that you have a lot of mud on your property.
And oh, I see what you're saying.
Maybe try to get rid of that mud.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I don't believe that's insurable.
Right. You lose your house, they can compensate you for losing your house. But if suddenly you find you can't rebuild because you have no land, your land isn't insured. That's
right.
What you're, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense. And also, Joe was on the program and he kind of addressed some of this. And afterwards, he said that they're allowing, there's a proposition I wasn't aware of where you could transfer your low tax base to another home and they actually give you like 5 years. And you don't have to be over 55, and there's a lot more latitude trying to get people.
That's correct.
Right? Get them out. I guess Peter Rupert, Executive Director of UCSB Economic Forecast. So we're hearing one street, all 11 homes are gone. Gone. And what happens to that street? But again, I think people in general are resilient. The real estate market is so strong in Santa Barbara overall, Montecito. I mentioned that one house, $6 million, right near where everything is. I guess people are going to be more cautious hiring geologists and trying to see, you know, where they're at. But I think it's pretty well defined. What did you address what you think the short and long-term impact will be on both real estate and businesses in Montecito? Did you talk about that?
Didn't really get to talk much about that. It's just so uncertain at this time. That's why I brought up about the T and the Hezacita fire, that, you know, some people just decide not to rebuild on their property, you know, which is, you know, quite sad. But you're right. It's a very desirable place to live. I think uncertainty is out there. You know, some of the impacts that we, you know, we also had the assistant from the city and from the county, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, the revenues that might be lost through property taxes, what's going to happen to schools, given that they have lower property tax revenue. And basically the word I think there was, we used some of our rainy day fund money that they had to, you know, pay pensions to, they can absorb this.
I would say, though, the term rainy day fund would have been inappropriate.
That would have been inappropriate. Well, that's what they said. I know. That's what it was, though.
God, that's freaky. They didn't give any numbers of dollar values that of homes that they're not assessing now. So what that equate with lost revenue?
He does not know yet. He's still trying to determine that.
It's going to be a lot.
It's going to be a lot. There's
some,
no doubt about it.
Some major multi-million-dollar houses.
No. Yes.
And a lot of people also have this conception that a lot of these people were so wealthy, and there are plenty of people that were so wealthy that it wasn't even their primary residence, and they just, you know, they'll go move to another home.
Could be.
But a lot of people could have lived there. My good friend, not good friend, but a friend, Josie Gower, who died, she'd been in that house forever.
Right.
I mean, she wasn't a millionaire.
Right.
You know. So a lot of people like that, and that's, you really, it makes it very tough.
Mm-hmm.
But the overall if we're going to finish this subject, take a break, come back and talk about housing and business. And any last word to say? Was there some kind of a overall feeling of either optimism or?
I think it was what you said, Mark, that, you know, we're very resilient. The city and the county, the banks, they're all trying, you know, really hard. FEMA did a great job. SBA has been helping out businesses on Coast Village. We are resilient. I still think there's a lot of uncertainty out there. And, you know, if you're trying to decide, if you're close to one of these, you know, flood areas and you're trying to decide to rebuild there, you know, I don't know about it. You know, some people are going to say no, they might just bail or move to Hope Ranch or somewhere else.
Again, bail, wrong word reference to use. Sorry, I can't help. It's the whole subject is so not funny, and maybe I shouldn't make that joke. But the fact on the other side of the coin, you know, where they're this has happened, they saw what happened, they knew the state of the what'd you call them, the catch basins,
right.
and the repair, what'd you call them,
riparian corridors.
So they're going to improve on that. You mentioned the one in Carpinteria that was more recently designed, and they could see how it saved. So I think the technology, so there's that counterbalance, and we're going to be tracking that. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk housing overall, Santa Barbara, California, new proposed law to allow higher density. And I want to find out if Peter ever gets into trouble when he's giving out data, and it might someone might think that it's supporting a political party one way or another, and how he deals with that. And he's in fact he's brought his attorney here today. You know, he's traveling with his attorney, so we'll get his opinion as well. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.